You can visit our website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. And remember, we're giving you a chance to win €5,000 today of Mooney's money to beat those budget blues. All the details on our website, and you'll hear more about that as the programme goes on. We received a lovely book into the office. Well, we get books every day into the office, and we don't often do a lot about books, but this one was a nice one. It's about Moore Street, the story of Dublin's Market District by Barry Kennerk. Kennerk, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, K-E-N-N-E-R-K, Kennerk. So this morning, myself and Katrina went to Moore Street to meet Barry to find out all about the book.
Rosy up in Moore Street, Tipple and Neath the Shawl, the Owl, Ballamont and the Chaser. Oh, Rosie, she was neat, ah, the queen of all the street, cos Rosie was the dealer's darling.
That's a very small working.
What do you want for sixpence, Moby Dick?
Nancy Balls and Bullseye.
Barry, how are you? Nice to meet you.
Good morning, Derek.
Thank you very much for meeting me here this morning. It's a long time, I have to say, since I've been on Moore Street.
Right.
And I was reading Joe Duffy's foreword to the book, which made me laugh, I have to say. And I'll do an impression of Joe now, if I can. So if you just bear with me, I'll read you a couple of extracts from Joe's Ford, because everybody in the office says how good my impression of Joe Duffy is. Isn't that right, Katrina?
It's not right at all, Barry. Yeah, we right. Make fun of his impression
very,
of Joe
very
Duffy.
Very good impression of Joe Duffy. And I'm going to read you just a couple of extracts now from the Ford, because Joe tells of when he was a child, about 10 years old, coming down here.
He does.
And meeting Gay Byrne on the street and getting the autograph off Gay, and Gay only charged him a few quid for it, not too much. It's very colourful. If I can just open, there's the Ford there now, and I have a little mark here for where I'm going to read it. Yeah. So this is my Joe Duffy impression. Are you ready?
Very good.
Here we go now. Brace yourselves.
I got my first job as a lift boy in the Metropole Cinema Restaurant and Ballroom Complex. As a curious 13-year-old, I used to spend my lunch hours rambling around Moore Street. To me, all human life was there. The dealers were seen as a hardy bunch of women. If you don't want them, don't maul them, son. Here was a world where men worked for women, hauling fruit and veg by horse and cart to the makeshift stalls, which the females controlled with the sharp side of an orange box and an iron fist.
And then he goes on.
I know the street is not the same. Everything changes. Gayborn's autograph prices are now beyond everyone's reach. But Moore Street still retains the flavour of the nation, reflecting the people of the country better than any census ever could. Long may Moore Street flow through our veins, no matter where we find ourselves.
And I felt that was just the most wonderful description and actually analysis of Moore Street, certainly from my childhood as well. We came down here with the family and we'd buy vegetables and fruit and all that kind of stuff. Joe mentions the census there. Now, I know you looked at Whitelaw's census and found, was it 2,500 people living on Moore Street at one stage?
Well, the market that we know started right in the jam-packed little back streets and alleyways where the ILAC Centre is now, and then moved eastwards into the street by the I suppose, the start of the 20th century. So what we know of Moore Street today started back there. It was Dublin's souk or bazaar. Imagine if it had been kept, it would have been like a Temple Bar on this side of the Liffey.
Absolutely. But 2,500 people actually living in this area.
That's right, yeah.
Now, that was way back in 1700s or something like that, that census. When you came then to the 1911 census, did you find any change?
Well, what you find is that all of the little back streets, you find that they've been given over more so to second-hand clothes traders. I think something like a quarter of the city's second-hand clothes sellers were actually down here. You would have had a Tuggers who went out to Rathgar and places like that. They would have went door to door asking people for their second-hand clothes and bringing it back to the market and stockpiling it in big pyramids of clothes. Mm. So you do find that it changed over time, of course. And, of course, Moore Street became less residential. Started out as quite an upmarket street. Henry Street, too, started as residential. So those changes are reflected between the two censuses.
But how did it become a market in the first place, and when exactly?
I suppose going right back to the monks of Mary's Abbey, you would have had goods coming in from Dublin's hinterland, I suppose back as far as medieval times. And it started as an open-air market originally. And it was given more impetus then by the move onto the north side of the Liffey of the city's butchers, because people complained about the noise and the smells and so on. And they were set up in the Ormond Market. And they eventually trickled down here too. You would have had fish being cured on open-air frames originally, in a manner similar to you would see in parts of Norway today. Mm. So all of that trade was going on several hundred years years ago. In Georgian times, the market was famous for salmon caught at Island Bridge. Hard to imagine today that you could catch salmon in, you know, on Island Bridge, but there you go. And then you would have had what they call the superfluity of gentlemen's gardens. You would have had nectarines and pears and pineapples even sold down here.
It looks very different today, and the photographs you have in the book are absolutely fantastic. Great black and white photographs, and you can see on the cover, you have one picture of all the stalls, the fruit and veg and the flowers, and the old ladies, well, the street traders, the stall holders in their Peg Sayers look-alike outfits, let's be honest about it, right?
It's very Peg Sayers. Yeah.
And you flip over and then you have a cart with cabbages on it and people walking down the street and a very tall garden in the background there. It doesn't look like that today. It's changed a lot, hasn't it?
It has changed a lot, and I think that the traders have adapted very well to that change. You would find, for example, that pig's heads and crew beans, you know, the pig's feet that would have been popular years ago. There was a little girl, Garrick Keogh, you know, the actor Garrick Keogh, told me that there was a neighbour, his grandmother sold secondhand clothes, by the way, behind us here, and there was a girl who used to stand on a little crate in the evening time as people were coming out of the pubs, and she'd sell the pig's feet. And of course all that fell out of fashion, but now because of the demand from some of the other nationalities that are coming into the market, all of that stuff is back on sale again.
Yeah, well, not just that, a recession as well. People are eating the offal. That's what's happening nowadays as well. So they're eating all the kind of stuff that the cheap cuts, as they, I suppose, would have been called in the old days.
True.
There's a great description from one of the butchers, a testimonial, his story, because I like the way you've done the book. You've broken it up into different sections. But you have a section there where the people who lived and worked here or came in here are telling their stories. Brendan Egan.
Yeah.
And he tells quite vivid description of how they would slaughter the cattle. Do you remember it?
Oh, it's absolutely superb. I mean, for some listeners, it might be a little bit gritty, but nonetheless, I felt it was very important to capture that because, I mean, the lime yard, which ran parallel to the back of Moore Street, is where all of the cattle and sheep were brought. It's very hard to imagine today, but there were something like 11 or 12 butcher shops on this side where the Eilac is now. Mm. And all of the meat would have been brought fresh into the butcher shops. In an era before refrigeration, some of these shops would have been open till 11, 12 o'clock at night.
Or health and safety, by the way, and he mentions that. There was no health and safety then.
True, and I mean, you did, despite the obstacles, I mean, the quality of meat was surprisingly good. But you would have had the cattle brought in. They used what was called a captive bolt pistol. Mm. Now, my dad, as a child, would have remembered this himself. The spent cartridges that the butchers would have used, or even the unused ones, the kids would have banged them off the cobblestones. They got the bladders from the sheep, and they used to blow them up and tie them off and use as footballs. My dad would have done that as a kid back in the 40s. It's very hard to imagine today, but that's exactly what went on.
But he talks about having a porter and dispatching the beast and then how he actually went in and bled it and all that kind of stuff. And it
That's
is
right.
pretty gruesome stuff. And he was only a young fella at the time, around 14 or 15 years of age.
And isn't it interesting the way he describes the Jewish butchers, of course, because they didn't have to work on the Sabbath. And, of course, all the city's butchers wanted to work for them, all the young porters.
Well, now, you mentioned the Sabbath, and trading was illegal on Sunday. Going back in times, the license annoys you couldn't trade. And I found a reference to a fella called Thomas Mooney, who was fined in 1840 for trading on a Sunday.
Well, that was it, because the market came under the auspices of Dublin's Lord Mayor. He had an awful lot more power than he would today, and of course he presided over the city's courts, and he was responsible for weights and measures in the market. You would have had maybe some sharp practices in the Second World War, for example. You had mystery shoppers coming into the shops here.
Mystery shoppers. Goodness.
Yeah. And they came in because you would have had maybe a little bit of black market trade. I mean, we hope that doesn't go on too much today, but you would have had a little bit of that too, and people selling flour and tea and so on. And So they were responsible for making sure that everything was above board.
Picture paints 1,000 words. Lots of pictures in here as well. And everything was sold in the street. Flowers, vegetables, fruit, clothes, shoes.
That's it. You'd everything that a good craft market has today. And I think maybe that's what Moore Street has lost to some extent, because they've been cut off, I suppose, from the rest of the market now, which is now gone. But yes, originally, I mean, you had the full gambit. And somebody who came down here to buy shoes might have meandered out to buy their fruit and veg or even buy flowers. My grandmother had a cobbler shop over in Little Denmark Street. And there was a man who used to come all the way down from Ballina once a year to buy his shoes. And he used to put my dad's uncle up on his knee and say, "Will I take you back to Ballina with me?" And the nickname Bal stuck right through his adult life. That man was called Bal. So there you go. Yeah.
Well, you're mentioning shoes, and one of the saddest photographs for me in the book, I have to be honest and tell you, is on pages 36 and 37.
Oh, yeah.
And it shows the street traders, the stalls and clothes and scarves and a shoe stall that you just mentioned there. That's in the foreground. And in the background, just looking at the camera, actually, are two young fellas standing barefoot with caps on. And it's just a very, very sad photograph, I have to say.
Well, you're right. And Dublin, Moor Street has been known through the years for its wit, but it's a citrus wit, as Brendan O'Carroll calls it, because it is born out of hardship and very hard work as well. And yes, you're right. I mean, what the kids had to endure on the street, you would have seen a lot of that down here, kids under the stalls helping out their parents and so on. Seamus Scully, to whom the book is dedicated, he was a Moor Street resident in times gone by. He winced to hear Jim Larkin describe it as one of the poorest slums in Europe. You know, it's hard to imagine today.
It is very hard to imagine because, yeah, things are bad now. And there is a recession on, and it's a bad and it's a deep recession, and people are struggling. But it's not like that.
That's it. And if you think of people living in the tenement houses and so on, there was one man I interviewed and he told me that they tried to lay in their own water. They lived off Coles Lane and they weren't plumbed in at all. I mean, a lot of these houses hadn't got toilets or anything. And so they illegally took a feed off the main supply. You know, people were actually doing that just to try and make ends meet to get by.
Yeah, I saw the statistics from that census, that Whitelaw census, that said there were 13 families on average per house.
That's
I mean,
right.
That's a lot of families in the one house when you think about it.
Yeah, it is. But they got by, you know, despite that. But it's also the market here. It was very much part of what Terry Fagan, who wrote the book on Monto, would describe as part of Dublin tenement life, in the sense that the traders here had great charity. You would have had people coming down here after hours when trading was about to finish called the Picaroonies. And what they did was they asked for little bits of cabbage leaves or any little bits of leftover fruit and veg just to feed a family. And the traders here have always had great charity for people like that. You know,
well, actually, PJ Gallagher says that in his contribution to the book, and he says that you'd come down here buying shoes and that they would always give you a few bob off. And he talks about filming down here that scene of the Owl One. I'm not being disrespectful now, that's how he describes it, from a naked camera. And he was talking about filming the naked camera, the Owl One, who fancied everything that walked by. And he said normally when they were doing the series, they could spend days, weeks filming just to get one good shot. But on Moor Street, they got it all in one day because there was great characters here.
But people used to do reverse wind-ups on them as well. But that's it. Every single gag worked, which they got a whole series filming out of just one day down here.
Yeah.
But they used to do reverse wind-ups. You know, they said, go on over to your man over there. He'd be mad for it. And, of course, they went over to him and, get off the street, you dirt bird.
Was a dirt bird. She is a dirt bird, that Elwyn he portrays. Yeah. Nobody like that in Moor Street. I'm absolutely convinced of it. Now, talk to me about the Anti-Rat Association. I found that fascinating.
Oh, that was really fascinating, yeah. Seamus Markin, one of the interviewees, told me that during the 40s, particularly when shipping was disrupted, that they couldn't get their usual supply of rats from the UK, you know, for the medical colleges, for dissection. So what they did was they came down to the street. Now, all the young lads, they would have been a dab hand at ratting with the little terrier dogs they use around the back of the lime yard that we've been talking about. And the men at one stage said, yes, they had to form an anti-rat association, because literally, if you put the street lights out, you'd find there were swarms of them coming in. So the colleges came down and they asked Seamus if he'd collect up some rats for dissection. What they did was they put cages behind all of the butcher shops. They piled the rats into a big communal cage, and then once a week the men from the college would come back, they'd fed and watered the rats, and they were on a nice little learner from that. So it just goes to show you, I mean, they were everywhere.
And then there were protests.
Yeah, the motto was, the theme song for the protest was Stand By Your Pram.
Stand By Your Pram, yeah.
That's it. And Shawnee Lamb gave a great interview in the book as well, and he talked about how difficult it was, because that's the other side of trade. You have the roving trader, the Molly Malones, I suppose, as they call themselves, people who don't operate from a fixed pitch as we would see here on the street, but they move about the city. And of course, over the years, they were really harassed by the police, who would take their produce off them. It would maybe stay in Store Street or somewhere overnight, and it went rotten. You know, they'd come back the next day and it was a lot of money to them. And they were really trying to get rid of a lot of that trade out of the area. And there was a protest on O'Connell Street, and Tony Gregory, Lord rest him, he and Christy Burke, they refused to be bound to the peace and they went to prison for two weeks. But Shawnee was saying, you know, his opposition to the charge they wanted to levy against some of these women was, well, you know, how are they going to pay this fine? Should they have to go out and do more selling?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That was, I mean, I remember walking up and down, particularly down Mary Street, that end, you'd see the traders there and legging it when a guard would come along. It got very violent on one occasion. That was the time Christy Burke and Tony Gregory were arrested.
It's a great story. It's a great book. And if you're interested, you can find out all the details on our website. So thank you indeed to Barry this morning. And to the Buckley sisters, who've been there for over 40 years and the mum before them, they sell the fish just outside of the side entrance to the ILAC Centre. And we said we'd say a very special hello to them because they're selling fish there today and listening to the programme at the same time. If you happen to be around Moore Street today, go buy some fish off them. They sell everything. Clams. They sell those razor shells. They sell prawns. They sell salmon heads. Now, I wouldn't buy a salmon head to save my life. But anyway, they sell all kinds of fish there. And they said they wouldn't stay there if they weren't making a few bob, and they're doing okay. So listen, thank you very much indeed, Barry. Go to Moore Street if you haven't been. Have a look around it. Take it in. Take a deep breath and you will enjoy it. Trust me.